Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 29th of May. As I woke up this morning, I realized I was having a baby on this day 16 years ago. So happy birthday to my son, Andrew Patrick Dunn Bauman, who's 16 years old. You know what those years are like. And he shares the birthday of former President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, who would have been 91 years old today, born on May 29th of 1917. First hour of our program today, we're going to talk about the Consumer Confidence Index, which has been continuing to decline. The consumer's appraisal of current conditions have grown more pessimistic in May. Those claiming business conditions are bad rose to 30.6% from 26.5% just a month ago. Consumers' assessment of the job market downbeat. The percentage of consumers saying jobs are hard to get virtually unchanged, 28% versus 27.9% in April. And consumers have said that they are just, you know, on the whole, unhappy with the way the economy is going. The comfort index stands at minus 51 on its scale of plus 100 to minus 100. More than 45% rate their personal finances positively, but that's just 3 points from the record low in March of 1993. And there are differences, of course, among different economic groups, among high school dropouts, among high school graduates. But on the whole, things don't look very rosy for consumers in this country. We were reading some interesting news from Milwaukee that the consumer condition has caused this city to close or think about closing four neighborhood libraries, eliminating a firefighting company, raising property taxes are all under consideration as what the Milwaukee mayor calls the most challenging budget he's faced as mayor is currently being put together. How do fuel prices figure into all of this? What's happening with housing prices? I'm particularly interested in hearing from you because once we're reaching $4.10 per gallon and paying huge amounts of money for heating our homes and houses aren't selling very well and jobs are not real plentiful, it seems to me as though there are a lot of people among you who are hurting financially, and I'm wondering what you think it will take for things to pick up. We're happy to have as our guest this first hour, Professor Ernie Goss. He is McAllister Chair and Professor of Economics at Creighton University. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. And if you want to send us an email, please do talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. Professor Ernie Goss, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Kathleen.
Tell me what this index means. It's been being kept for something like 22 years of weekly ABC polls, and it shows that it's as low as it's been in a long, long time. Is it a significant consumer confidence index?
It is, Kathleen, but I have to say the outlook for consumers and workers is much worse than the reality. In other words, the U.S. and most states are losing jobs, but the outlook as consumers see it is much worse. And I think that has a lot to do with not job prospects, but to those that keep their jobs, how much that income's worth. And what we're seeing, of course, is prices are rising a good deal faster than individuals and workers' income. So that's the real problem, at least right now. Of course, if this continues and we still see job outlooks and loss of jobs, then that becomes a real problem.
Yeah. What is it that's going to make things better?
Improvement in housing, no doubt about
really?
It. Housing is still the trouble point in the economy, and we've got to see that turn around before this economy turns around.
Yes, and what will it take for that to happen?
Housing prices to increase. Since January of 2007, Kathleen, housing prices have declined. Now, and I expect them to continue to decline for this year. So that's the real problem, is individuals see the value of their homes going down and down and down, and some of them see the value of their homes now less than what they paid for the price, and a lot of folks are walking away from those homes, and that makes a problem for the bankers and lenders as well.
Mm-hmm. People are walking away from those homes, meaning what? They're selling them at a lower price, or they're
they're actually going into foreclosure, and I expect that foreclosure rate to increase as well, because the individuals are getting jobs in other areas, and they have to move, and they have to sell, and they're selling in the market that's not very good at all.
Right. Yeah, it sure isn't very good. I was watching the news last night, and there was an interesting piece about people who would be considered middle class in this country who are now going to food pantries, and the shelves are becoming empty in food pantries because middle class people who never used to be there are now there. They're being hit really hard by the price of gasoline, the amount of money to go to work, et cetera. What about that? Do you find a whole new group of people who are having shaky confidence in the economy and taking part in food bank programs?
Absolutely, Kathleen. And you talked earlier about the problems of the city government of Milwaukee.
Right.
And that's much like a lot of charitable organizations. Not only are the demands for their services growing, but the contributions to those organizations are down. So you're finding those charitable organizations getting a little more aggressive about getting increases in giving, and then you've got the government there with their cost increasing, yet their property tax base, at least in terms of values, declining. So it's pinching those organizations.
The price of fuel, I never talked about it as much in my whole life as I have the last couple of weeks, is so high, it's got to be hitting people hard.
Absolutely. We're seeing prices now likely to go above $4 a gallon nationwide. Now, that's for regular gasoline. And this is changing the way everybody's doing things, families, what businesses are doing, what the government's doing, as it should. We need to see these changes, because part of what's gotten us into this trouble and this problems is the U.S. consumer businesses have not been making the changes that were necessary.
10% of Americans rate the economy as excellent or good. It was 11% last week. The highest was 80% in January of 2000. The lowest was 7% in late 91 and early 92. Why the big difference?
Well, of course, the economy is just not doing well. Those the 10% that rated excellent are probably in healthcare, for example, which is doing very well. Education doing very well. Some other areas, of course, some of the, in the finance sector, believe it or not, some of the areas in finance are doing well. And on the flip side, what's not doing well, housing, manufacturing, even though it's doing pretty well in terms of output, job prospects in manufacturing are not doing very well. And I'd say on the plus side, those companies that do a lot of exporting, they're doing much better now than they were, say, a couple of years ago.
And is it hitting different segments of the economy in different ways, Professor Goss, in terms of high-income people, in terms of low-income people, in terms of college graduates, extra degrees, low-income, high school dropouts? Are they all being affected differently by this economy?
They are, Kathleen, and as most things, it doesn't matter if it's the weather or the economy or whatever, it normally hits those on the lower end of the economic spectrum, and that's what we're seeing here. Of course, it's affecting all income earners in this case, of course, unless you own a heck of a lot of Exxon stock and you're getting those nice dividends and you're increasing the stock price as well.
Right.
And so it is. And the job prospects, though, Kathleen, are really not that bad. The unemployment rate is still at a pretty good U.S. unemployment rate, 5%, and the Wisconsin unemployment rate's below that at 4.3%. So I think, as I said earlier, the individual is much more pessimistic than the economy, the real economy, but maybe they're seeing something we economists are not seeing. In other words, is there real trouble down the road? And I think that will be determined by, as I said, housing, what happens to housing, and also oil prices. If oil prices bound up to, as Goldman Sachs, they're expecting it to bound up to $150 to $200 a barrel. That will present some real problems.
Yeah, it sure will. When you talk about the unemployment rates, do people have good jobs, or are we also looking at an economy where there are a lot of people working minimum wage jobs?
Well, Kathleen, the jobs are reasonable. We're seeing not much change in the job market overall. The problem is that wage growth is not really kept pace with some of the price increases. We're seeing year over year a 4% increase, and that's the price of all goods. And, of course, if you happen to consume for a lot of oil or energy. In other words, a family that has to do a lot of driving to and from work, for example, they're doing much worse. So that's the real problem. It does tend to affect businesses differentially. For example, this summer, you're going to see airline transportation. They're already cutting back on flights. So if you're in some tourism-related sectors, that's going to present some real problems this summer.
Mm-hmm. And I think about all those people who are driving for a living, truck drivers, et cetera, they really got to be hurting.
Absolutely. Can you imagine pulling up to the pump and seeing that'll be $400, please?
Oh, right.
That's more than I consume in a good period of time.
There have been some attempts to turn around the housing market. Can we talk about this in a little more detail? Because I'm not sure I fully understand it. Why are the prices just going? They're just tumbling.
Well, you know, Kathleen, what happened was we're just returning to the mean or the average. In other words, there was a huge run-up in housing prices that there are only two things that could sustain that growth, and that would be an increase in population, a big increase, and that didn't happen, or a big increase in income, and that didn't happen. So there was so much speculation, so much flipping and so much going on, and then all of a sudden it came to a halt, and all of a sudden you've got prices that are still too high. The housing prices are still too high, and now we've got families and individuals that are in the market to buy. They're holding on. They say, well, next month prices will be even lower.
Right.
And that presents another problem.
Right. And it's probably true prices will be a little lower next month.
I think they will. I think they'll be lower at the end of the year than they are right now. And I do believe it's going to be 2009 early on before we really see much of a change in that.
And what will happen then?
I think we'll see the housing prices bottom out, and we'll see some growth, and individuals will get back in, but that's assuming in the meantime that we don't have a heck of a big increase in unemployment, which would really compound this positive scenario I painted, although that's not all that positive, of course, for those individuals that are trying to sell a house in this environment. Not a good time to be selling.
No. So what do you recommend to people who are self-serving? I'm trying to sell a house, my dad's house. And the price, just my own personal experience, it's good school system. It's in Illinois. It's one of those houses that was built after the war and not in terrible shape. But, man, we've had to lower the price. And I'm wondering, it almost feels like we're giving away the house.
Well, you're going to probably have to give away some enticements, maybe some sort of sauna, give away some nice appliances, some enticements that way, and not give it away in terms of necessarily dropping the house. And you're seeing builders doing a lot of this. Residential construction in this city, in this country, I should say, and also in Wisconsin, is not doing very well. In other words, the job losses there. And for teenagers that look for jobs in the summertime in residential construction, not a good time to be looking for those jobs.
What was the report I heard the other day that of all teens looking for work, and this is college students as well, only one-third who are in that age range will be able to get summer employment this year?
Yeah, it is not a good situation in many places. Now, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska. It is much better here. Nationwide, about 16% unemployment in the teen market, so it's not a good market. But that varies by city. Milwaukee maybe it seems fairly negative there, but it's much better than if you went across the way to Detroit, your neighbor there. Michigan is probably the toughest environment one of the toughest environments in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome phone calls. I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who want to talk about how all of this is affecting them. We're talking about the Consumer Confidence Index, which is at its lowest point since 1992. Consumers are expecting that things are not going to get better for a while here. Consumer confidence reaching a record low this week in more than 22 years of weekly polls conducted by ABC. They are, somewhat a little bit more optimistic about their own salaries, but still it's low when you look at what it was some years ago. And all of this is having effect on not just Milwaukee. We were looking at stories yesterday about Milwaukee and how they're going to deal with very difficult budgets in the coming year. But it's affecting middle-class people who are going to food banks and people who drive a lot for a living. Have you changed your habits as a result of all of this? Do you feel that things are going to get better? What would it take for things to get better? How do you rank your confidence in the whole economy? Where would you put it? And we could actually give you the scale. It's now at minus 51 on a scale of plus 100 to minus 100. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Or if you'd like to send an email, you could do that. That address is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Consumer Confidence Index is what we are talking about this hour of the program. Our guest is Professor Ernie Goss. He's McAllister Chair and Professor of Economics at Creighton University. And we're looking at how low it is and trying to get a feel from you as to how you're handling the economy. Do you feel that your jobs are paying you enough money? What are you doing about the incredibly high cost of gasoline? Those of you who live fairly far from where you work, what do you do about that? Do you feel your finances are in pretty good shape? If you're trying to sell a house somewhere, what's happening with the housing market? What do you plan to do to sell your house? What about the number of houses going into foreclosure? And as we try to be optimistic about all of this, what will it take for everything to turn around? It looks as though there's little likelihood of a turnaround in the immediate months ahead. Our number? Lines are open. Join us, 800-486-8655. Kathy from Wapaka is our first caller. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, the question I have is, to what extent does the continuing occupation of Iraq and, to a lesser extent, Afghanistan have to do with the economy? Supposedly, we are financing this war through loans, and a lot of them are coming from China, which we have been led to believe is, you know, being a communist country is our mortal enemy, and yet they are financing a lot of our debt right now. So to what extent does that tie into the current economy? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right, Kathy, thank you.
Kathleen and Kathy both are what I think has contributed, of course, is there is lower oil output, and we're getting less from Iraq. But I think it contributes more towards speculation. With the Iraq war, with the war in Afghanistan, and with the troubles in the Mideast, we're just getting more speculative activity. And what that means, of course, is a lot more volatility, spikes up and down. And we could see prices moving down for oil, but we more likely to see price of oil move upward, and I think it is somewhat related to the war in Iraq. In terms of who's financing it all, you're absolutely right. It's not just China. It's South Korea, it's Japan, it's the Saudis. All those countries are lending us, for example, just the three countries, China, Japan, and South Korea, probably $1.2 trillion, that is, trillion, that's with a T, in terms of buying our long-term debt and short-term debt. So they are financing a heck of a lot of consumption by the government, but also by individuals, by we Americans out there consuming a bit too much and not saving enough.
Mm-hmm. How much should we be saving if we can?
Well, Kathleen, our savings rate is now negative, meaning we're consuming more than we're earning. And what we need to do, we'd like to see that, at least in my judgment, increase to 10% overall. What we're seeing now is high-income individuals are saving. Low-income individuals are doing what we call dis-savings, meaning borrowing today.
Yeah.
And hopefully they're going to be able to pay it back tomorrow.
Right. What about this whole field, which everybody is talking about now, and I'm wondering if it's going to take off anytime soon, of alternative energy, so that we're really not depending on this foreign oil and these huge prices? Do you see a lot of jobs to be created in that area? Is that industry ready to blossom?
It is, Kathleen, and it's not blossoming fast enough. At least we should have seen more of this early on. For example, in Newton, Iowa, there was a Maytag plant there that just left the U.S. shores. Now there's a wind turbine plant there producing wind turbines. And in, for example, in our neighbor Iowa, there's a plant. They're going to add 1,000 turbines, wind turbines, in just one county west east of me here, and that of course is going to be very good. It creates a lot of jobs. Not as much electricity as we'd like to see, but it's certainly better, and as the price of oil increases, that becomes even more viable.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Bill from Brooklyn. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Just a little last segment there is kind of what I wanted to talk about as far as like peak oil is concerned and transitioning our economy into bioproducts, renewable energies and such, if that is going to be a significant boost to our economy in terms of kind of pulling us through this recessionary tendency we're seeing, or if your guest sees that that being relatively insignificant in the grander scheme of things, I guess.
I think in the long term it is going to be significant, but in just getting us through this rough time, I don't think that's significant. But it's certainly a move in the right direction. And maybe everybody's looking for somebody to blame in terms of all this. Well, blame economists. It's supply and demand. Our laws of supply and demand, that's what's driving the price increases to a large degree. Now, as I said earlier, there is a lot of speculative activity going on. There are problems in the Mideast that are tend to be driving up prices, at least increasing the volatility. But I think ethanol, corn-based ethanol, while it is a it has provided some relief. What we need to see more of is a way, I think, towards cellulosic ethanol production. That would be ethanol produced from wood chips, for example, switchgrass, for example, which is not as costly. There are arguments that say that there's more energy goes into a production of corn-based ethanol than you actually get out.
Mm-hmm. And there are experiments with, what, algae and just using vegetable oil in cars. We did a show on this yesterday. It's amazing how many possibilities there are that we just haven't moved forward.
Absolutely. And part of the reason, Kathleen, is we had oil at $11 a barrel back in early 1999, late 1998.
Really?
$11 a barrel. Can you imagine?
No,
that?
I can't imagine that. That's amazing.
Well, unfortunately, that was below what it should have been. That encouraged us to ignore some real problems in terms of the supply of oil and the demand for that oil. So now we're getting into a more realistic environment where we do need to be more energy conscious, and we need to be looking at alternatives. Obviously, unless we're going to bring in oil from Mars, we're limited in terms, at least to a large degree, of oil production.
Mm-hmm. What about the buying climate? This report shows that it's at a record low of 19% of people saying it's an excellent or good time to buy things. The best was 57% on January 16th of the year 2000. What aren't we buying?
Kathleen, what individuals are not buying is some of the discretionary items. Of course, they're still buying food, but when they buy food, they're buying less of it outside the home. For example, restaurants, and I think we're going to see more of that in the future, and that's going to hit, I think, later on this year. More of the high-end restaurants, individuals are going to be eating more at cheaper restaurants, they're going to be eating more at home. So that's one mm-hmm. thing we're certainly going to have bought less of. We'll buy even more. Even less in the future, I should say. And also airline tickets. Although the airlines are accommodating that by cutting back on flights, and we're going to see more and more of that, it's just going to be a tough summer for the traveler that wants to go to, for example, Disney World. I would recommend that Milwaukee residents go west to Madison to see What Do You Know with Michael Filman's show. A lot cheaper, and for my money, I'd rather see that than Disney World, but that's my own preferences.
Thanks for the plug. Email, the state of the economy in 2008 could have been predicted 5 years ago. Since President Clinton and his signing of NAFTA, the U.S. economy was on a gradual downward trend of job outsourcing, but the 2003 invasion was the last strawberry, which hastened the breakdown of the economy.
Well, Kathleen, NAFTA was passed in 1993, signed by Bill Clinton, and I think that was a good piece of legislation. I do think erecting barriers to immigration, erecting barriers to products into the U.S. is no good message. I think it's bad for the economy. I think the U.S. can be and will remain very competitive, but we'll only remain competitive if we don't erect those barriers. Even though we're still outsourcing, and people, I hear this all the time. People say, well, we're not producing anything in America anymore. We're producing more than ever. Manufacturing output is higher today in America than it ever has been. It's just we're producing more with fewer workers. In other words, productivity is what's killing a lot of jobs in manufacturing. But that's on balance is a good thing, as long as those individuals who lose their jobs can get good jobs outside of manufacturing. And we're not seeing enough of that, of course.
Mm-hmm. And what could those jobs be? Do we even know what they are?
Well, they're in a lot of it is in healthcare, Kathleen. Uh-huh. Education is doing real well. Finance and insurance, another industry that's doing well. But it's not always the job in manufacturing, production manufacturing, that individual moving toward, well, it's easier for me to say, well, move over to healthcare. Well, the bundle of skills is very different. So what we've got to see in America, and more locally and more in the state, is retraining. We've got to talk about continual retraining, and that's where the community colleges come in. The universities don't do a very good job of that, and I'm with a university, Creighton University, and I would say most universities just don't do a good job there. The community colleges do a much better job at continual training, retraining, providing the skills that industry needs.
So does that problem start with high school, that we don't give our high school students the information about where the jobs are and how important community colleges may be?
Absolutely. But also parents are at fault. Every parent wants their young daughter or son to go on and become a college graduate,
right,
a four-year college graduate, and become this and that. If your son wants or daughter wishes to become a welder, where there are lots of welding jobs out there, that's sort of looked down upon. There's a heck of a lot of income for a welder.
Hmm.
There are a lot of welding jobs out there. Now, you may have to move geographically, but still, we have a bias toward the university degree. I think there does need to be a rethinking of that, of
mm-hmm.
course.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call, Bill. Let's go to Tom next from Madison. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you, Kathleen?
Fine, Tom. How are you?
Well, I'm okay. I had a few comments. One is I'm always disturbed by the quotation of these unemployment statistics when they radically do not represent the number of people who are unemployed or underemployed in this country. And I really think economists bear a lot of responsibility for that. Instead of these statistics based on who's getting unemployment or applying for unemployment, they ought to really be looking at the actual data that could be gathered on that, and I don't think that's been done. Secondly, when you talk about savings, I mean, to expect the middle to the lower class to actually be saving is absurd in an environment where the prices of food and oil are going up so dramatically due to the speculation that's going on. I'm glad the professor mentioned that, because I think if you look at the oil that's available right now in the marketplace, it's no different than it was a year, year and a half ago. But this market, the oil's being kept off the market, and the speculators are making billions on oil that's just not coming to market based on the idea that we're going to run out of it sometime down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, third, I think the discussion about alternative fuel can't be had unless you talk about the fact that the government has done absolutely nothing since Reagan, pretty much, although a little bit during the Clinton years, to provide any incentives for the individual or for the corporate world to develop alternative fuels. You don't get a major shift in one of the largest driving forces of our economy and our transportation and our food system without huge investment in doing it. And there has been nothing. There's been literally nothing, especially for the last eight crazy years. You can't expect it to change. And while I guess what the professor said about, related to oil to Iraq, I would say, look, we're spending $1 trillion in Iraq. That money should be spent on the development of a massive energy switch to alternative fuels, because the fact of the matter is there isn't enough oil in the world to continue to operate the way we do, and using it is also destroying our planet in terms just of the outcomes of using it.
Mm-hmm. Tom, start with the last point. If you're spending that much money in Iraq, you're not doing other things.
Well, absolutely. We call it in economics the production possibility curve. If you're not producing, you produce more of this, you produce less of something else, and that likewise with consumption. And I have to say, if there is a beauty to high oil prices, it's causing conservation. It's causing us to get into wind energy production and so on. So I think the best is yet to come in that regard. If we continue to see oil prices back up here, if we retreated to $11 a barrel of oil, that would really just slam the industry and hurt the efforts to do renewable energy. And Tom also brought up an interesting point about we economists ignoring a certain part of the unemployment, and that's true. In other words, to be qualified as unemployed, the rate is now 5% nationally, 4.3% in Wisconsin. That means you have, during the last week, Are you over 16 years of age, first off? Were you looking for a job? That's the second requirement. And were you unable to find a job? That's the third requirement. You meet all those conditions, you are considered unemployed. Well, if you become discouraged and say, well, it's just not worth it, then, of course, you're not counted as unemployed, and that's absolutely correct. And there are people out there, individual workers, who have become discouraged who are not looking for jobs. So to that degree, the unemployment rate is not a good measure, but it's the best, one of the best we've got anyway. And I look at job growth, which is perhaps a better measure, and we've lost jobs now for four consecutive months, and that's certainly not good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tom, unless you had other things.
Well, I think the measures are official measures with my unemployment comments. So it's a lot of people haven't given up looking for work, but they've given up going through the unemployment comp system and having to file these papers every week and all this other kinds of stuff just because it's doing them no good. And again, a lot of people who are working in the economy that is under the table, if you will, or off the books. And so there's huge numbers of those people, too. Why I think that's so important to the conversation is because those people are living on the very margins, as are so many other people. And when you start talking about oil and food prices going up, it literally puts them deep into poverty.
Mm-hmm. But in that regard, Tom, you don't have to go through the apply for unemployment to be counted as unemployed. That's a household survey. In other words, the Bureau of Labor Statistics goes out to homes and actually knocks on doors. Now, the question is that a representative sample? That's a very good question. But they're not relying just on the people who apply. And you're absolutely right. There is a lot of off-the-books income that's earned out there. And that is a measure that we economists and government officials are missing, certainly. One other point you brought up, and I think it's very interesting, you talked about withdrawing oil from the system. Right now, refining capacity in the U.S. is down from 87 to 82%. Now, I don't know what's causing that, and perhaps the oil companies, I don't think it's a conspiracy, but my question would be, why have they cut back on refining usage?
To make more money.
You'd think that, and they are certainly making a heck of a lot of
money
right now.
Yeah. Thanks very much, Tom, for your interesting comments. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our guest is Professor Ernie Goss, McAllister Chair and Professor of Economics at Creighton University. We're talking about the Consumer Confidence Index, which reached a record low this week in more than 22 years of weekly polls by ABC. We're examining why it is so low, the effect of the price of oil, the loss of jobs, and also how it's going to affect communities. We started the show by looking at what Milwaukee's doing to deal with this, because communities, cities all over the country, are going to be faced with cut in Well, their budgets, they're doing budget deliberations, cuts in jobs or cuts in services because they just can't afford to do all that they used to do. We have one line open if you'd like to grab it. 800, we don't have one line open, so don't grab it, but we will have one line open, 800-486-8655. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, a new study done of minority children in foster care showing they are hurt by a federal law that plays down race and culture in adoptions. The report is based on an examination of the law's impact over a decade, which said minority children adopted into white households face special challenges and white parents need preparation and training for what might lie ahead. All right, let's go back to phone calls for our guest, and our next caller is Don from Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Don.
Hey, hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Don.
I listen to you guys on a regular basis. In fact, I listen to it on the radio in the car, and I wasn't going to call in until the professor said NAFTA is a good piece of legislation. I don't totally disagree with that, but I don't place much trust in economists. No disrespect to you, Professor, but because you guys talk about law of averages. And I guess when you say NAFTA is a good piece of legislation, my question is, I'm thinking we went in there because we wanted the businesses, big businesses wanted to save money. And I've been teaching manufacturing here for about 22 years in a local tech school here. And when I started the program here, people couldn't come into the campus and hire them, you know, fast enough. But then in the last 15 years, I've seen about 3 plant closings and about 700, 800 people, and some of the very productive operations go to Mexico and China. And my contention is, gasoline is a matter of supply and demand. That's not going to change. We're going to see $200 a barrel of a gallon of gasoline. But the only thing is those jobs that went out there are not going to come back because big businesses found out, you know, that it's going to be a lot cheaper. They're not going to have to adhere to regulations and all the environmental concerns that they have in this country. They can go and dump whatever they want and make it one-tenth the price and sell it at Walmart. And that's basically what's going on. In my impression, I might be wrong, but educate me on that.
Okay.
Well, you know, Don, I'm certain you're right that the U.S. has lost some of those jobs as a result of open markets. But I think there was a recent poll that 60% of Americans are opposed to globalization. Well, I hate to say this, but 60% might as well be opposed to gravity. This is a change that's going to take place. I don't see it as entirely. I don't see it as negative. What we can't do to protect those jobs, erect barriers to companies and so on. All that will mean is we'll lose jobs in another area. Right now, the U.S. is producing more, as I said, manufacturing than we ever have. A lot of the job losses just come from more and more output from fewer and fewer workers. We don't have as many people in farming today. The average farm is twice as big as it was 50 years ago, yet and there are 50% fewer people working on the farm, yet we're producing more than we ever have. Same thing's going on in manufacturing. We're not going to try to bring back the family farm. I don't think we can bring back a lot of those manufacturers. The U.S. needs to specialize, focus on manufacturing that's high quality, high human capital content. In other words, where you have to have a high level of education. We'll never bring baseball manufacturing back to the U.S. It's going to be in Haiti or other countries, and I don't think we need a policy that encourages that. In my judgment.
Thanks, Don, for the call. An email from Janelle, who says, are the gas prices in the European Union rising at the same rate as in the United States? If not, why not?
That's a great point, and they are increasing, not quite as significantly, but they are globally. What we're seeing, a lot of, as I said earlier, the reason we're seeing higher oil prices, to a large extent, gasoline prices, is supply and demand. There is speculation, of course, and there is some withdrawing of capacity by oil companies to increase prices. But overall, it's supply and demand. And in Europe, the price increase has not grown quite as significantly. And the reason is, of course, is there, the Europeans have done a better job in terms of alternative sources of energy, but also they drive shorter distances. There's better public transportation in Europe. Drive across Germany, you'll see a heck of a lot more wind turbine production, for example. So what happened, of course, as I said earlier, is we had very low oil prices, $11 a barrel, and gasoline prices to match that. Well, while in Europe they had much higher gasoline prices at that point in time, and what we saw there was the government had a very high tax. I think we in the U.S. have really been deceived by these lower oil prices and deceived in terms of doing some things that were not in our best interest long term.
Let's go next to Judy from Milwaukee. Hi, Judy.
Yes, I am curious about what effect the falling value of the dollar in comparison to other currencies has for Americans. I know it's good for manufacturers that export their goods overseas, but I'm wondering what effect it has for people like me.
Great question, Judy, and that's certainly one thing I did not talk about. It makes oil, of course, more expensive, and that makes gasoline more expensive. So a lot of what we're seeing is just due to, a proportion of what we're seeing is due to a cheap dollar, and that comes about, to some degree, the Federal Reserve has reduced interest rates, and that has produced a cheap dollar. What it means is, for example, here at Creighton, we have classes that go to France during the summers for various things. Instead of staying in a nice hotel, they may be camping out this year. So across the U.S., individuals are traveling less to Europe, traveling less outside the U.S., and that's certainly one of the impacts.
Another email, Jay from Columbus. The fact that fuel prices are not factored into the inflation rate hides the fact that the economy is worse than it seems.
Well, that's a great point, although it is factored in terms of what we call a headline number. The headline number year over year is 4% increase from last year. But we economists like to say, well, if you take out food and energy, it's only 2.1%. Well, it's nice for us to take it out, but for Americans out there, they can't take it out. That's what they're buying. And the reason it's been taken out to produce the core rate is this assumption that ups 1 month are matched by downs in the past. Well, that's not happening now, so you're absolutely right. We need to focus more on what we call the headline number, which is the overall inflation gauge, which is up dramatically, 4%. So to focus on the core, which excludes food and energy, is deceptive in my judgment.
Judy, thanks for the call. Dan from Franksville. Hi.
Hi. No respect to the man here, neither. I think it's a little off track. Above Highway 8 in Wisconsin has been in a depression, not recession, depression for the last 20 years. That's moved down the last 10 years down to about Highway 10 or even Highway 29 has been in depression, at least for the last, we're talking over 25% unemployment up there. People going to prison like crazy. Re-educate these people. They don't even stand the chance. They're simple families. You're not going to re-educate them. Actually, they are getting re-educated a teeny bit. They get re-educated on how to live in prisons. That's where they're getting re-educated. And then when they come out, they're educated into being like nutcases because they're sort of a barbaric sensory deprivation up there. And a lot of them prisons, they get beat up.
And they've lost their job. How have they lost their jobs, Dan? What jobs did they have?
Well, there, like he says, NAFTA is coming. It's here, and it's going to happen. And, oh yeah, well, it has happened. That's why we have the biggest prison population. That's happened, and because the stuff that they negotiated them contracts with the NAFTA were crappy contracts. The contracts were no good. They didn't benefit this country at all. They benefited corporate America. Because that's who government works for.
Okay, we need to get a response. We have a lot of calls, Professor Goss.
You know, Dan, I don't. I know this is going to sound very cruel, but and it does. Economists do sound that way. But what we've got to have is more flexibility among individuals, and now geographically mobile as well. There are jobs in Wyoming, for example. There are lots of jobs in Utah. Now, it's again easy for me to say that the individuals pull up themselves and their families to move. move, but we do need to see more of that and perhaps some government programs to assist those individuals to move out of areas where you have a 25% unemployment rate. There's no doubt about it, but for example, in Omaha, Nebraska, our unemployment rate here is about 3%. There are plentiful jobs. There are plentiful jobs in certain areas of the U.S., and there are places of 25% unemployment. Detroit, right now, you can buy a house, you can buy several houses in Detroit, for example, for $100,000, and of course, that we need to see movement out of some parts of Michigan into places where there are more jobs. So, again, it is easy for me to say, but there could be some government programs to encourage migration, encourage movement out, so they're not going to prison. They're, in fact, going to jobs.
Thanks for the call, Dan. Bill from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Bill.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Okay. I just want to say that there's one thing and one thing only that drives the economy, and that's consumer confidence. And when economists wring their hands over inflation or recession or depression, it scares people into stop buying. When they stop buying, jobs go away. A more accurate way of looking at it would be to look at a ratio and proportion of cost to income. For example, back in the 50s, my father made $2,500 a year. A bicycle cost $100, and an airline ticket cost $300. Today, the average income is $40,000 a year, and airline tickets are still $300, and bicycles are still $100. All we're going through here is a market adjustment. When you make more money, you got to expect to pay more. You know, money doesn't stick to anybody. It just flows through you. It's what keeps the whole economy flowing, when money flows to you and from you. That's my observation.
Professor Goss.
I don't disagree with a lot of what Bill's saying there, but I'd have to argue consumer confidence, although confidence is down, spending continues. In other words, we have to look beyond consumer confidence, and consumers are spending. It's just, unfortunately, they're having to spend a lot on energy-related products, which also, unfortunately, a lot of those dollars end up in Saudi Arabia, and that causes some of our problems, of course. To the point about the income to what it costs to live, that's absolutely true. And what we have to look at is how fast are prices growing and how fast are our incomes growing. And unfortunately, recently, income growth has not matched price growth. So it is a tougher time right now for a lot of families out there, even though it's not quite as bad as we painted the picture in terms of overall the overall economy. Because, as I said, right now, quarter one GDP, the overall measure of output in the economy, was up 0.9% in quarter one. It's not as bad as we implied. We need to see about four or five times that growth rate, though.
Another email, please comment on seniors as a drain on resources while no longer being contributors to boosting the economy through reduced tax contributions and reduced discretionary spending. Past two decades, all levels of government have been planning for the increased needs of the baby boomers as they become seniors. What will we do in the next few decades for all of us, 40 to 60-somethings, who have not been able to adequately, if at all, save for retirement?
Great point. Change. That's what we're going to have to do. No doubt about that. We've got to change these policies that encourage individuals, almost force them into retirement. Right now, most baby boomers, the retirement age is 67. We're going to have to at least provide some incentives for individuals to stay in the labor market longer, because we, as a society, cannot afford the Medicare obligations, liabilities we're going to see in the years ahead, and the retirement, the Social Security retirement obligations. Something has to be done there, and that is absolutely true. One of the things we're going to have to see is, as we live longer, we need to stay in the labor market longer. And that, again, that's easy for an economist or a professor to say. What about for a roofer out there?
Right, sure.
And we're going to have to see more of that. But it's going to have to be an incentive, a carrot, not a stick. And I think we are going to see more of that. And we're going to see it in the next, whoever the new president will be and whoever the new Congress and Senate will be.
John from Nina, hi.
Hi. I got to disagree with this economics professor, but
won't be new.
a little while ago, I noticed in the paper that Wyoming coal is being exported to France because it's economically viable due to our weak dollar overseas. So to me, that's a sign we're being treated as a third world colony. And I think the job of economics professors is to be like the Judas sheep and lead us down the trough while we're the middle class is being attacked.
Well, I'd hope not, John, but you may have a point there. But to the point of sending coal to Europe, I think that's a good thing, although, of course, we've got a market for it here. And prices are a way of encouraging movement to and from high demand, from low demand to high demand. And what that means is dollars are, in this case, if we're talking about euros will come back to the U.S., and that, of course, we will convert those to dollars. That enhances the income of folks in Wyoming, businesses in Wyoming, and that filters out to the rest of us. So I certainly would not like to see barriers that say, well, you need to send your coal to New York or to Georgia or wherever. I think the businesses make better decisions than governments, and I think those decisions are pretty good. Unfortunately, right now, our balance of trade is about $60 billion a month. Our trade deficit. In other words, we're bringing in $60 billion more of merchandise and services than we're sending abroad. And that's the reason the dollar is one of the reasons the dollar is down dramatically.
Professor Ernie Goss, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's been good to be with you, Kathleen, and your listeners out there.
Professor Ernie Goss is McAllister Chair and Professor of Economics at Creighton University, spending this hour discussing American consumer confidence, which reports show is at its lowest point since 1992. We thank him for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee, and thanks everybody for listening. We have another hour to go following the news, so stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.